All right, let's dive right in today. We're going way back to 1888 to a Supreme Court case. Arkansas Valley Smelting Company versus Belden Mining Company. And, you know, this case might sound ancient, but it deals with some really fundamental stuff about contracts that, honestly, we're still wrestling with even today.
Oh, absolutely. This one's a classic for sure.
Yeah, it really boils down to, like, this question. When you have a contract, when can you just hand it off to somebody else?
Right.
And when do you need to get permission from the other side to do that?
Yeah, the assignability of contracts. It's a core concept that, well, that pops up all the time.
Yeah. And to really wrap our heads around this whole idea of contract assignability, we're going to take a little trip.
A trip?
Yeah, a trip back in time to, like, late 19th century Colorado to this mining deal that went a little bit sideways.
I'm intrigued. A mining deal gone wrong. Sounds like a recipe for a good legal battle.
Oh, yeah. And at the heart of it, you have this tension. You have this idea that contracts should basically be transferable, like other assets.
Right. Makes sense. Contracts have value, so naturally you'd think you could transfer them.
Right. But then you have this other side where some agreements are so tied to the specific people or companies involved.
Ah, I see. So the who matters just as much as the what.
Yeah, exactly. And in those cases, you can't just transfer it without the other parties say so.
So set the scene for me. What were the players in this mining drama?
So picture this. It's 1881, Colorado. You've got Belden Mining Company. They've got a mountain of lead carbonate ore, like 10,000 tons of this stuff. And they make a deal to sell it to this smelting firm called Billing and Eilers.
Okay, so we've got our ore supplier and our smelter. Sounds straightforward enough so far.
Yeah, but it wasn't like a simple, here's the ore, here's the cash kind of deal.
Oh, what were the catches?
Well, first off, deliveries weren't going to start right away. They were waiting for a railroad to this place called Red Cliff. Once that railroad was done, then Belden had to deliver at least 50 tons of ore each day.
Ah, so a logistical wrinkle right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And what about the price? Was that set in stone?
Not at all. Yeah. The price was actually tied to the New York metal market prices. And get this, they would figure out the exact price when they sampled the ore, which they did in like 100-ton batches.
I see. So the price could fluctuate depending on what the market was doing.
Exactly. Payment happened after they delivered the sample bottle, so to speak.
So you can already see where the risk comes in for Belden.
Oh, yeah. This was definitely an ongoing relationship, not just a one-and-done deal.
Makes sense. Ongoing deliveries, a price that could change. It's adding layers of complexity, especially for Belden, who's counting on getting paid.
Right. Now, fast forward with me a bit. To January of 1882, Billing and Eilers, the smelting firm, they decide to call it quits. They dissolve their partnership.
Hmm. So what happens to the contract now?
Well, Eilers steps away from the business completely. But Billing, he decides to keep going, keeps the business running. And importantly, Belden Mining keeps sending him the ore under the original terms of the contract.
Okay, so it seems like Belden was okay with this change, at least initially, from a partnership to Billing running the show solo.
Yeah, no complaints from Belden at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But then, plot twist, May 1882 rolls around. Billing decides, you know what, I'm going to sell my entire business.
Ah, here we go.
Yeah. And as part of that sale, he tries to assign, basically transfer, that ore supply contract he has with Belden over to the new owner, a company called Arkansas Valley Smelting Company.
And I'm guessing this is where Belden puts their foot down.
You got it. Belden basically says, nope, not happening.
Yeah.
They flat out refuse to work with this new company. They stop delivering the ore, and they basically declare the contract canceled.
So this is it, right? This is the legal showdown. Could Billing just unilaterally transfer this ore contract to a completely different company without Belden's okay?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And it's what eventually lands them in court, all the way to the Supreme Court.
Okay, so before we get to the Supreme Court's decision, what happened at the lower court level? Did they offer any insight?
Well, the circuit court, they actually sided with Belden Mining right away. They sustained Belden's demurrer.
A demurrer. Now remind me, what exactly does that mean in this context?
Yeah, so a demurrer basically says, even if everything the plaintiff is saying is true, there's still no legal basis for their claim. So the circuit court was basically saying that Arkansas Valley Smelting, the new company, they didn't have a leg to stand on.
Interesting. So the lower court really set the stage for the Supreme Court to weigh in on this whole idea of assigning contracts. So what did the Supreme Court decide?
Well, Justice Gray, he wrote the majority opinion, and he really leaned into this thing called the personal confidence doctrine.
Personal confidence? That sounds intriguing. What's that all about?
So basically, he was saying that Belden's original deal with Billing and Eilers, It wasn't just about the ore. It was about trust. It was about Belden believing that Billing and Eilers specifically would hold up their end of the bargain.
Right. And you can definitely see why that would be important in a deal like this, especially with those ongoing deliveries and the fluctuating prices.
Exactly. This wasn't a simple exchange of goods. It was a relationship that was going to play out over time. And with the price tied to the market, Belden was taking a real risk. They had to trust that Billing and Eilers, with their established reputation and financial stability, would be able to make good on their payments, no matter what happened to the price of ore.
So Belden's confidence in Billing and Eilers as a specific entity, that was a crucial part of the deal.
Absolutely. And the court really hammered that home. They even cited a precedent from an earlier case that said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically, you can't just force someone to work with a different party if the contract involves liabilities.
Meaning Belden had the right to choose who they did business with.
Exactly. But here's a question for you. Remember how Belden kept delivering the ore to Billing even after Eilers left the partnership?
Yeah, that was before Billing sold the entire company.
Right. So if the identity of the contracting party was so important, shouldn't that have been a problem for Belden too?
That's a good point. How did the court address that?
Well, they made a distinction. They said that Belden was willing to keep going with Billing after Eilers left because it was still essentially the same deal. The terms were the same. Belden knew Billing.
Ah, so Belden was accommodating a change within the original agreement, not consenting to any future substitution.
Exactly. It wasn't a blank check for Billing to just assign the contract to whoever he wanted down the line.
That's a really important distinction. So what are the big takeaways from this case from a legal standpoint?
Oh, well, first, you've got that personal confidence test we talked about. Basically, if the specific person or company you're contracting with, their skills, their reputation, their financial standing, if those things are essential to the agreement, then you can't just transfer that contract to someone else without permission.
Right. That makes intuitive sense. Makes me think of hiring a specific lawyer or consultant. You're choosing them for a reason, right?
Precisely. And the second big takeaway is that there's a difference between assigning rights and delegating duties. Like, you might be able to hand off your right to get paid under a contract.
Ah, so I could assign my right to collect payment to someone else.
Yeah, potentially. But you can't necessarily delegate your duties to perform under that contract, especially if those duties involve specific skills, reputation, or financial reliability.
So in the Belden case, they might not have cared who actually cut them the check for the ore, but they definitely cared about who was responsible for smelting it and ultimately making sure that payment happened.
Exactly. Now, this case might be from the 1800s, but it's not just some dusty old relic. It's still hugely relevant to contracts today.
So how does this personal confidence idea play out in modern contracts?
Oh, all over the place. Think about professional service agreements, for example. If you hire a lawyer or a consultant because they're the best in their field, they can't just pass your case off to some junior associate without your say-so. The contract is based on your confidence in their specific skills and expertise.
Right, the agreement's with that lawyer, not just any lawyer from that firm.
Exactly. Or think about franchise agreements. The franchisor, they're very careful about who they let run a franchise. They don't want just anyone using their brand name and potentially damaging their reputation. So those agreements are usually pretty strict about assignments.
Makes sense. It's about protecting the brand and making sure the franchise can deliver on the brand's promises.
Exactly. And even in more standard business contracts, like long-term supply contracts where one company is relying on another to deliver goods or services over a long period, this case is still important.
Especially if those contracts involve credit terms or complex performance obligations, right? Sort of like Belden relying on Billing and Eilers to manage the smelting and payments.
Right. The original parties need to be sure that they can trust the other side to fulfill their commitments, not just today, but down the line.
So for lawyers drafting contracts today, what's the big lesson from Arkansas Valley Smelting? How do they handle this assignability issue?
Clarity. That's the key. If the specific person or company matters, if their skills, reputation, or financial standing are essential, then the contract needs to spell that out. You often see something called an anti-assignment clause.
Anti-assignment clause. Okay. So that just makes it crystal clear that the contract can't be transferred to someone else without everyone's consent.
Exactly. It protects the original parties and makes sure they're not stuck dealing with someone they didn't agree to work with.
But are those clauses always ironclad? Are there ever situations where a contract can be assigned even if there's an anti-assignment clause?
That's a great question. And honestly, it can get pretty complicated. Courts generally favor the free transfer of rights, so they tend to interpret those clauses pretty narrowly.
So a vaguely worded anti-assignment clause might not hold up in court.
Right. It really needs to be clear and specific. And there are also some situations like bankruptcy or certain types of corporate mergers where a contract might be assignable even if there's an anti-assignment clause. But even those situations, they come with their own set of legal complexities.
It seems like the legal system is trying to strike a balance, recognizing the value of freely transferring contracts while also acknowledging that sometimes the identity of the parties really matters.
Yeah, it's about finding that middle ground. And at the end of the day, Arkansas Valley Smelting really highlights this fundamental principle of party autonomy in contracts.
Party autonomy? You mean that parties are free to choose who they contract with?
Exactly. It's not just about the what's of the contract, it's about the who. And sometimes the who is just as important as the terms of the agreement itself.
So even though this was a case about a mining deal from over 100 years ago, it still has some important lessons for us today. It reminds us that contracts aren't just about the exchange of goods or services, they're about relationships. And sometimes those relationships are built on a specific trust in the other party, a trust that can't just be transferred to someone else.
Absolutely. It really makes you think, doesn't it? Whenever you're dealing with a contract, whether you're a lawyer or just someone signing an agreement, it's worth taking a step back. Look beyond just the words on the page. Ask yourself, did the original parties put a lot of trust in each other? Would bringing in a new party really change the nature of the relationship? Would it potentially disrupt the balance of the agreement?
Great questions to keep in mind. This deep dive into Arkansas Valley Smelting has really shed light on how we can protect the original intent and expectations of the parties involved in a contract.
And it underscores that even though we often prefer the free transfer of rights, sometimes who you're dealing with, it just matters.
Really does.
And on that note, I think we've mined all the insights we can from this case for today.
Yeah, I think we've extracted all the valuable ore from this one.
Until our next deep dive, keep those contract principles in mind. And always remember to ask yourself, who am I really dealing with here?
Wise words. Until next time.
See you then.